This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePaul. This week, we take a peek behind the scenes of this year's musical production, The Rocky Horror Show. Our student producers preview upcoming choral and orchestra concerts. We hear about two faculty recitals coming up this week, one from voice professors Caroline Smith and Carrie Jennings, and another from piano professor May Pong. Music history professor Chris Lynch explains why he finds John Cage's sonatas and interludes for prepared piano moving. And we go into the classroom with Professor Nicole Brockman and her fascinating course, Music and the Brain. There are lots of exciting things going on in the DePaul School of Music, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life. Right around the corner is the Rocky Horror Show, and we have three students involved in the production joining us to chat about it. We have...
My name is Jennifer Peacock. I'm the music director.
Hi, I'm Brooke Addison. I play Janet.
And I'm Rick Allen. I play Dr. Frankenfurter.
And you're the music director.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So
Thank
as a
you.
Student, you get a music directing credit. Music, that's good.
I feel really lucky.
Yeah, and so are you playing piano too?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, boy. So, you're one of the female leads. Well, I guess you are the female lead. There aren't really more than one, is there?
There's Magenta in Columbia as well.
That's true. And I can tell by that voice. Yes, great. So, and what's your major?
I'm an English writing and theater major.
Uh-huh. And so is this your first musical?
This is my first musical, yeah. First time singing in general, actually.
Really?
Yep.
How's he doing?
Very nice job.
So what brought you to this show?
I just knew that I wanted to music direct as much as I could, and so I asked Steve Tim pretty early on last spring semester if I could be involved, and he let me do it.
Not only just be involved, but jump right in and be the music director. That's fantastic. How about you?
Well, I love performing, and Rocky Horror is one of my dad's favorite shows. So I grew up, we watched the movies and all of that, so when I heard that we were doing it, I was really excited about it.
So has he come to do the time warp, is he?
Probably.
Yeah. And how about you?
I knew Steve back from when he directed At the Diner before his sabbatical, and so he emailed me to make sure I came out and auditioned, because he knew I didn't for the last two musicals we did. So that's how I got reeled in.
And so how's it going?
It's going pretty well, actually. We have a week from now to get it all put together, and then next Thursday night is opening night. It'll be at 7:30.
In Moore Theater.
Yeah, I feel like everybody's doing a really good job. We still have to implement some mic stuff and costumes and all that technical
jazz.
This
is a technically challenging show.
Yeah. And we have a rock band on stage too, right, which has been a whole other set of...
And you guys are being on stage.
We are right center stage the whole time.
Wow.
Yep.
How is it to play with a rock band instead of the typical pit orchestra you're used to?
I love it. It's actually really fun that they're on stage too, because there's an interaction between us, and it's always easy to see what's going on because Jennifer's right there.
Very cool. How are you liking it?
Oh, I love it. They really inject a kind of enthusiasm, especially because this is our first week we're rehearsing with them. And so the energy level is a lot higher, which is great going into Tech Week.
Yeah.
Usually you kind of...
Yeah, you want to get that now.
It's not a show meant for just piano.
Yeah, I remember directing a little Shop of Horrors, and we wanted to put the band on stage, and we couldn't figure out how to make an excuse to get them on stage. So we had a music shop next to the dentist shop, and they were playing the instruments in the window.
Nice.
That's a really good idea.
So what's your excuse? How'd you get the band on stage?
I have no idea.
It's Rocky Horror. You don't really need to explain anything.
Yeah, it kind of just played into how Steve designed the set with just the way it's set up. It's a really awesome set. Kind of a pain to act through sometimes. Mm-hmm. You get, I think, like 15 feet up in the air at its highest point. So that's fun.
Well, it sounds like a great time, and it opens on Thursday, October the
3rd
at 7:30 in Moore. They're a great example of what happens here at DePaul. We've got a great production by the theater department that includes a lot of School of Music folks and even a student music director. Great opportunity. So we hope you'll come out and see it, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
Hi, I'm student producer Burke Stanton, and I'm here with...
Student producer Rachel Clark, and we're here with the Student Corner. We have two members of the orchestra here with us today. Freshman violinist Akil Davis.
Hello.
And senior cellist Sam Kelly.
Hi there.
So Akhil, my first question is for you. Making the transition from high school now into the university orchestra, what type of new challenges have you had to face? Any adjustments you've had to make in this process?
Well, it's definitely been a lot more interesting here in the university just because everyone here is so focused on what they're doing and they love what they're doing. So it's been really nice being around all these really intense players. There were definitely some adjustments that needed to be made with my practicing and things like that, but it's gotten better in the last couple of weeks, and I've really enjoyed it.
How about the size of the orchestra and just, you know, having the full sections? Did you go to a high school where you had that, like, full orchestra instrumentation?
Yes, we did. We actually had a pretty big orchestra, so it's interesting being in smaller sections and really being accountable for what you're playing now. It's really nice.
Sam, you're a senior this year. How has the ensemble changed since you were a freshman?
Well, the ensemble for me has always been changing, new members and different people coming in and out. But I have to say, over the course of the 4 years I've been here, I think the level of trust in every section has sort of grown. Even with the new members coming in, I feel like it's a very friendly ensemble. And the more we've been here and the more that Smith has sort of opened up to everyone, it's become very trusting and kind of bonding experience for all the members coming in. Mm-hmm.
I feel like the violin section is actually very young this year. Now, Rachel and Akhil, you both can speak to this.
It is. And the cello section, too, I've noticed. Some really good freshmen this year. So, that's exciting.
How do you guys feel about the rep? I mean, we're playing with Claude Zimmerman doing the Grieg Piano Concerto, doing Kevin Putt's Millennium Canons, Respighi's Fountains of Rome. How are you guys responding to those pieces? Like, maybe what's your favorite one? Akhil, if you want to speak first.
Well, coming from a high school orchestra, it's definitely a lot better. Like, I love the repertoire that we're playing this year. It's definitely a lot more challenging. And I love that we're getting to accompany someone. Professor Zimmerman's phenomenal, and I just love getting to play with him.
It's really exciting. Sam, you've seen him, been around and hearing his recitals longer than any of us. How do you feel about performing with him?
It's a great experience. I mean, he's a wonderful performer, and the way he presents himself on stage is a way we all should present ourselves every day. I mean, he just has sort of this suave effect, but yet he has a command of everything he does. It's great to work with him.
Yeah. Do you guys have a favorite piece, Akhil?
Maybe Fountains of Rome. It has so many different elements to it. It's a lot of fun to play through. I really like it.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I really like the Fountains of Rome piece, but I do like that we're doing a modern work by Putz. Smith always seems to incorporate some piece from the contemporary period, and it's great to always have someone who's from our time period having that kind of music represented.
Definitely. For me, it's exciting to be playing the music of someone who's continuing to make music. And I think that's an exciting opportunity here at DePauw with the 21st century and the composer and just being able to play music that's still very much alive.
Oh, yeah.
So if you were talking to your friends about this upcoming concert, what would you tell them?
Well, I'd tell them that even if they don't normally like classical music, they should definitely come out to see this concert because they might be surprised by what they find and they might actually turn out to love classical music.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. Most of the friends that we have outside of the school music, they know classical music, they've heard it, but they don't get to experience it live as much as we do in rehearsal. So it's great for all of my friends and everyone to be able to come out and experience this.
Definitely. The concert is Saturday at 7:30. It's October 5th in Kresge Auditorium in the GCPA. We'll be performing with Claude Zimmerman, who's doing the Grieg Piano Concerto. And we hope to see everyone out there. It's going to be a great concert. Akhil and Sam, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hi, this is Matt Champagne, producer of Music for Life. Last week, we had an exciting visit from composer Adam Gettle, which culminated in a concert of his music. We'll be sharing three pieces performed during that concert with you throughout this episode, beginning with this one. From the Adam Gettle in Concert program of Friday, September 20th, 2013, here are Stephen Linville, Blake Lambton, Emily Smith, Blake Beckenmeyer, Kristen Danes, Laura Neal, Dylan Prentice, and Derek Truby performing Adam Gettle's piece, Icarus.
Was sick and tired of the hullabaloo. When would he ever make his mark? Icarus was not a believer. His father trusted him and took him for granted that he would turn out to be just as enchanted. that all he needed was some help getting off the ground.
On Monday, September 30th, at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall, we will have a faculty vocal recital. featuring Amanda Hobson on piano and two stellar faculty vocalists who are joining me in the studio and told me to say that. Caroline Smith and Carrie Jennings, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So tell us about this recital. This is part of our Faculty Select series. You guys are performing on this. And what's up?
It's a celebration of American music.
Oh.
And in addition to also being the wonderful accompanist and collaborative pianist, Amanda will also be playing a solo piece, Nocturne by Samuel Barber.
Oh,
and
another great American composer.
Carrie will be doing...
We're doing two songs by Lori Laitman and a song cycle by Tom Chipulo, which are all pieces that Amanda and I recorded last summer and are on the CD that should be released soon by Centaur Records.
Right, so there's a new CD out, and it's going to be released any moment.
Any moment, yep.
And kind of in the center of all of this is a cycle that I've wanted to do for a long time called December Songs by Maury Yeston. And it was actually written way back when for the centennial celebration of Carnegie Hall. And he was actually commissioned to write a song cycle. And it seems especially appropriate with all the 21CM talk because it was really the cutting edge for combining classical music with crossover. And so it spins on a dime many times.
Mm. So tell us a little bit about this cycle.
Mr. Yeston decided, because he was so inspired, and I think rightfully so, feels that Die Winterreise is the epitome of the song cycle.
So let's explain to our audience what that is. That's a Schubert song.
Schubert song cycle, loosely translated Winter Journey, and is about a man, love lost, going through all of what he goes through, suicide, contemplation, etc. The difference being that he has set it in a contemporary setting in Central Park, and it is a woman. But it is something that anyone truly can relate to who has ever been in love, lost love.
Wow.
So it's quite moving.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful moment. Yeah. So have you guys coordinated this program so that these pieces are thought as a recital as a whole, or is it just that we get these different moods and settings as the evening rolls on?
We decided to do all American music, and it just kind of worked out that they all tend to be about the same sort of things. They're all reflective of some sort of love loss. I wouldn't call
night.
It the... Yes,
I mean,
there are lots
nocturne.
Of images of evening and things like that.
Oh, yeah, great. So is it possible that this is a recital in which all the songs are in English?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, when was the last time that happened? Yes, this is great. So this is a classical vocal recital of American music in the English language.
That's right.
Wow, fantastic. Ties into 21CM very well. 21CM, we've been talking about over the season here on Music for Life about our new initiative for creating the 21st century musician and for us reacting to and leading how classical music is changing in America today. So three different artists. We have solo piano, we have works for male and female vocals. Do you guys do anything, all three of you together?
We do.
We do.
Oh, there's something up the sleeve that you can't tell me, right?
Yes, just stay tuned.
Yeah. So if you want to know how that one works, you'll have to come to the recital itself. That recital is Monday night, September 30th at 7:30 in Thompson. And thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you very much.
I'm Christopher Lynch. I teach music history here at DePauw, and today I'm going to talk about a piece that moves me, John Cage's Sonatas and Interludes, which he composed between 1946 and 1948. It's a set of 20 movements, 16 sonatas and 4 interludes. Today we will be listening to the first 4 sonatas. Some of you may be wondering, what's wrong with your radio? I assure you, probably nothing. You're just experiencing the music of John Cage. Now you're asking what's wrong with me. This music surely isn't moving. And I actually agree with that, but I'll add an ironic twist. Because this music is not moving, it is, in fact, moving. Cage was always an unconventional composer, partly because he was largely self-taught, and partly because he wanted to explore musical expression, or the absence of it, in a way that composers had not previously explored. In this work, the sounds you are hearing are created by a single instrument, the piano, but a piano that is what we call prepared. That is, Cage has instructed the performer to prepare the instrument by placing screws, bolts, erasers, and pieces of plastic and rubber in very specific locations on the strings inside the piano. This results in a distorted sound and lends the instrument the sound of an exotic percussion ensemble. And with that, Cage closes the opening movement. Note that there really was no melody or harmony to be resolved as in conventional music. Instead, Cage's sounds merely ended in an abrupt and inconclusive manner. Knowing now that Cage isn't concerned with conventions of melody and harmony, let's listen to Sonata 2 for what he does care about, sound and structure. Cage defined music simply as the organization of sound, and this conception informed his method of composition. He would lay out a series of spans of time, which he called empty containers, and he would then fill these containers with music. The result is rather disjointed. The music in one container is not connected to the music in the next. Cage, therefore, was more concerned with isolated sounds than with creating a logical and unified trajectory in his music. Indicating his lack of concern for musical continuity, he stated that the sounds with which he filled his empty containers were chosen as one chooses shells while walking along a beach. Why would someone want to compose a series of random sounds like this? And why would someone want to listen to it? Cage wrote disjointed music that did not feature traditional chords and melodies because he did not want his audience to be rationalizing his music, to be theorizing about it as they listened. If he were to write music that used conventional means, his audience might think, oh, there's that chord that is always followed by this chord, or, oh, this melody sounds like all melodies do when the piece is almost over. Cage believed that this thought process would distract the audience from actually hearing the music, from hearing the sounds, in its most basic sense, from pure experience. So the function of Cage's containers is to isolate and highlight pure sounds. At times the sounds are jarring, at times they're beautiful. And I think the kind of listener who appreciates musical color will always find Cage's music rewarding. But I would add that everybody needs to occasionally let go and to lose themselves in something. After a stressful day at work, or perhaps when your brain hurts from studying all night for a test, this music offers an escape from thinking. In the absence of conventions, there is nothing to think about. Instead of brooding over where the music is going or what other music it sounds like, Cage's isolated sounds encourage an emptying of the listener's mind. And that can be restorative, even, if you will, moving. I'm Christopher Lynch, and John Cage's Sonatas and Interludes is music that moves me.
From the Adam Gadolin Concert Program of Friday, September 20th, 2013, here's baritone Case Nafziger and pianist Amanda Hobson presenting Gettel's piece, Hero and Leander.
Could Hi, this is Canadian Brass.
You're listening to Music for Life.
One of the highlights for me each year is the May Pong recital. May is one of our piano faculty members, and she will be presenting her first recital of the year on Thursday, October 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in Thompson Recital Hall. And here to chat with me about it is May Pong. Welcome, May.
Hello.
So what do we get to hear this year?
Well, last year I focused a lot on contemporary music, mm-hmm. and I did a dim sum program here. So this year I wanted to get back to my roots as a pianist, and I'm going romantic.
Ah, and so who is on the program?
For those that were at the Gobin recital a couple of months ago, there will be some pieces that are repeated on this program.
Ah.
But I think if I had to sum it up, it's a fantasy program.
Hmm. So who's your first composer?
Well, come and you'll see.
Can you tell us anything about it?
Well, okay, there are going to be little gems, I would say, romantic pieces, short and sweet.
Really?
And there are some by unusual composers like Levitsky and Gabrilovich.
Ah.
They are Russian immigrants to the U.S., and there's a composer, Blind Tom, who is an autistic savant.
Really? Blind Tom?
Yes, who was a slave.
Right,
actually.
He was a slave,
yes.
And he was blind and was a savant and could play things that one else in the world could play.
Yes, and he could play two different hands, different tunes and different keys, plus sing a third.
Yes. How did you come across Blind Tom?
Actually, this was from a program that I had done in the summer at Gobin. I decided to change the program a bit because I feel bad subjecting if there are audience members that are similar. I hope they will come back and listen
again. Oh, of course. They would love to hear you play twice.
But I wanted to give them something different as well, so I'm doing a mix and match.
And so where did you find Blind Tom? Have you played Blind Tom before?
No, first time.
This is the first time. And how did you come upon him?
This was with doing research on Mark Twain, and Blind Tom was one of Mark Twain's favorite musicians.
Right.
I mean, he wrote about him so much.
He did, and it's fascinating stuff. I mean, Blind Tom was, you know, at that time, unfortunately, we called them idiot savants because he wasn't bright.
And that's exactly the term he used.
Right, he used it himself. Yeah. Now we refer to them as savants because they're really brilliant. They're just challenged in the typical way,
right.
And Blind Tom was capable of, as you mentioned, he could play one tune in one hand, a different tune in the other hand, sing a third tune, and keep it all going. But as I understand it, he also played things that other pianists couldn't emulate. Isn't that right?
Because he was able to recreate any sounds he heard, mm-hmm. it was almost that he... Yeah, and there were actually accounts of professors at universities testing him
right.
to see, and so they would play something they had just composed, and he did it exactly...
Right.
The same way.
You know, I have to say that my first experience hearing May was in my first semester, and I believe the piece was called Turning.
Yes.
And I was just so mesmerized by that piece, and it's so virtuosic, and May made it sound easy. So I think anything Blind Tom threw at you, you could pick up and make happen. I'm sure you could just, you can take him, right?
It's a quiet piece.
So we'll leave it at that, I guess, since we can't say more. All we can say is you don't want to miss this recital.
Yes, please come.
Okay, so that's Thursday night, October the 3rd at 7:30 on the new Clarkson-Bosendorfer.
Yes.
In mm-hmm. Thompson Recital Hall, a concert not to be missed.
Hi, this is Anna Gadula here with a student corner featuring members of our choirs to talk a bit about the upcoming choir concert. Members from both DePauw University Choir and DePauw Chamber Singers are here with me, so let's go around and introduce everyone.
Hi, I'm Dana Hart. I'm a sophomore in Chamber Singers.
I'm Elika Okerstrom, and I'm a senior in Chamber Singers.
I'm Lucas Wasser, and I'm a fifth year in Chamber Singers.
I'm Derek Truby, and I'm in University Chorus.
I'm Hannah Gothier, and I'm a first year in University Chorus.
I'm Dylan Prentice. I'm a first year in University Chorus.
Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Hey, Anna.
So what are you guys working on in your different choirs?
Well, I'm really excited because we are doing a collaborative piece with DePauw Capella. We're going to be performing Imogen Heap's Earth, which is really exciting. So to get to collaborate with CLA students is really kind of a rare opportunity for us. But they've been working really hard, and so have we. So it'll be a cool effort between the two choirs.
The cool thing about the Earth piece is that we're actually performing with them on our concert, mm-hmm. but we'll be performing with them on their concert as well.
Later
in the semester. Excellent. So that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. And what are you guys working on in university choir?
We are working on a piece from the Navajo Children, which is quite interesting. We get to perform with an instrumental ensemble.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, Chamber Singers is doing that too.
Right. And I think having all three groups come together will be really neat to be able to work with Chamber Singers, the upperclassmen,
and Wind Ensemble.
And Wind Ensemble to just create that cool sound.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, actually, when you think about it, because performing with everybody in the School of Music is definitely going to be like a humbling experience. Definitely need to rise to the occasion. So I'm a little nervous.
But all the different pieces we're doing that are all earth related, that's super cool.
Yeah. And there's different genres that are being performed at this concert too, because we have, you know, the contemporary pop piece with earth and Chamber Singers and a cappella. And then we have From the Navajo Children, which is a very contemporary, but it's contemporary art piece. And we get to do that with Wind Ensemble. And then I know Chamber Singers were doing some pieces from Saint-Saëns that are very nature-themed. What else are you guys doing in university choir?
We're doing things like What a Wonderful World. I think that everybody's doing that piece. And then this one beautiful piece by Eric Whitaker, Seal of Lullaby.
Oh, my. Yes, that was beautiful.
It's gorgeous. We performed it at
Depopalooza. Right.
Depopalooza was a little loud, but I definitely remember when we sang that piece, there was a quieter-ness about the audience, because they were just like, whoa, that's
there was a stillness,
really pretty.
For sure.
So I'm excited to perform that one.
Mm-hmm. I've actually sang that a while ago when I was younger, but as a woman's piece, so it'll be interesting to hear it as a SATB arrangement.
I think just the whole theme of the concert, the earth and all that, I think it allows us to be a little bit more freer with our interpretation and how we feel when we perform it.
How's the rehearsal process going for everyone? Is it tough? Is it scary?
This is my first year in Chamber Singers, and it's definitely an adjustment from U-Chorus. It's a smaller group, so we all have to really stay on top of the music and make sure that we put in the time outside of rehearsal as well as Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 12:30 rehearsing. So I'm finding myself listening to recordings on Spotify, practicing it a lot more, as well as my solo music, and just really making sure that I'm staying on top of my part.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool in university chorus because it's a mixture of School of Music kids and CLA students. Mm-hmm. And it's really awesome to see everyone actually putting the time in and working, even if they're not a music major. It's very... don't know the word I'm looking
for.
Unifying.
Great word. For you first years, how is being in a college choir different from your past experiences? Or is it the same?
It's kind of the same for me. I don't know. I had a good choir program back in high school.
100% different.
Yeah.
I am a little blown away, actually, by the intensity of the program. Sorry to interrupt, Hannah, by the way. But I just, from high school, having that program where you had a bunch of kids who didn't really care that much about the music, to coming to DePaul, where even like the CLA kids, like Hannah was saying, like they're all like dedicated, practicing. It's just like, on top of the fact that sections are smaller, even in university chorus, and it's even smaller in chamber choir. So if you mess up, everybody will hear you. And I mean, nobody's going to make fun of you, but they're definitely going to be like, okay, bro, get on your part.
Just in general, it's taken a little bit more seriously, but in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think obviously the level of music is higher and it brings the challenge to it to have you have to rise to the occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really good thing, different from high school.
To my seniors and, well, my super senior too, how has your DePaul choir experience shaped your musical career?
It's definitely been really, really good. As far as like musicianship goes, when I was a freshman and sophomore, I feel like I learned more about musicianship and sight reading and ear training being in Chamber Singers, especially once we brought in Dr. Risto.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really great experience. I feel like every year he kind of ramps it up, forces you to sight read. And if you
work a little harder.
Yeah, and if you don't sight read well, it's kind of embarrassing.
I think it's just really special to be a part of a group setting and singing in a group, because a lot of times there's so much emphasis placed on solo repertoire as like a vocal performance major that you kind of forget what it's like to have to listen to other people and not just listen to yourself. I mean, it's a lot of team effort. Excuse like the cheesy metaphors and whatever I'm about to say, but just having to kind of be selfless in it, or just like be able to know that you're responsible for your part, but you have to be there for everyone else. And I don't know, it means a lot to me. You get very close with these people, and like singing brings you together for a long time.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for stopping by and chatting a little bit about our upcoming choir concert. It will be on Sunday, October 6th at 7:30 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium. So get your tickets, folks.
From the Adam Gettelin Concert program of Friday, September 20th, 2013, here's baritone Yazid Pierce Gray and pianist Amanda Hobson presenting Gettel's piece, How Glory Goes.
I'm ready now, Lord. I know I weren't no Sunday school mama's boy, but faith is hoping for something. Believing what you can't see. I have faith all my life. I want to ask you something. Always know.
Here on Music for Life, we love to go into the classroom to chat about new and innovative things that are happening here in the School of Music. This semester, we're offering an interesting course about music and the brain. This course is taught by Dr. Nicole Brockman, our viola professor. And here to chat with me about this innovative offering is one of our students, Alicia Petroni. And Dr. Brockman, welcome.
Thank you so much.
So, Alicia, let's start with you. What prompted you to sign up for this course?
I've heard amazing things about the class by friends that are in the CLA and the music school, and I love Dr. Brockman, so just kind of sounded good.
Okay, so you can pay her later for that compliment.
I will, yeah, the check's in the mail, Alicia. Do you take PayPal?
Okay, so now to you, Dr. Brockman, what's prompted you on this subject? We have this thing called topics courses. It could be any topic, but you chose this one.
I did. Well, I have found myself getting increasingly interested in music and the brain research, especially as I'm thinking about how we can improve our music pedagogy. And it occurred to me to wonder, is there anything that's been going on in neuroscience? I know that there's a whole lot of activity in neuroscience right now about the effects of music on the brain. Mm-hmm. It's a really kind of a hot topic. Most of the people who do this research are interested in using music to figure out how the brain works. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to turn that around and let's see what happens if we take what we know about the brain. Can we change how we understand music? And could that affect how we teach music and how we listen to music?
So is this at the level of awakenings and this is your brain on music kind of conversation? Or is this from a different mindset?
In the course, we look at a lot of different things. There are two halves to the course. The first one is music in the brain, meaning the physical organ mm-hmm. of the brain. So we talk about musical processing, what in the brain does what in terms of musical analysis. We talk about music and intelligence, music and medicine. Mm-hmm. Music is being increasingly used therapeutically as an mm-hmm. intervention for Alzheimer's and stroke patients. So a lot of different things like that that have to do with the physical organ of the brain. And in the second half of the course, we look at music and the mind. So we talk about how do we understand music? How do we use our minds that shape human experience and that process mm-hmm. all of this data for us? How do we relate music to society? What does it mean for our identity? Mm-hmm. How do we use it in film, in mm-hmm. politics? Mm-hmm. And then finally, at the end, we're going to do a little bit on neuroethics and neuroaesthetics. So mm-hmm. now that we know how the brain works, what do we do about all of this information that we have about aesthetics? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Do we just throw that all out the window because somebody says, no, your brain doesn't really light up in that area. So Plato, I'm sorry, wrong.
Right, right. So what have you found, Alicia, that has been, I know we're only a few weeks into the semester, yeah. but what have you found about this class that's been interesting to you?
Well, I know nothing about the brain as an organ. So this has been really enlightening for me. And I've always really been interested in musical therapy and that kind of idea of using music for that. It's a big deal in the harp world. And mm-hmm. so just really realizing the effects that music has on your brain, on your personalities and things like that. The other thing has really opened my eyes to how we use music. And we were talking about, you know, music when studying. And mm-hmm. I definitely have had more conversations in my head when studying now about, like, should I be listening to this? Or, like, can I listen to this? And really focusing on how I study and how I do use music. So it's, I don't know, it's a good, like, soul-searching kind of, I know it sounds silly, but, it's one of those that is really branched out to more than just the classroom.
So. Yeah, the world is full of amazing examples of music doing things to us that we would not imagine possible.
Yeah. And this class has like made me realize that that is more evident than I had previously thought. mm-hmm.
It's a fascinating course. So will there be a final project or a product or something that these students do? How are they interacting with this material?
Well, in the first part of the class, I have to introduce them to a lot of material they've probably never done before. So there's a lot of sort of orientation to the study of the brain and music's influences on it.
Right, because think about that. You're really it would be different if you were teaching them a music history course. They're musicians. Absolutely. They have some background, but you're right. Teaching them about the brain, and they have no reason to know anything about that.
Right. It's very important to me that this course runs as a mix of College of Liberal Arts students and School of Music students. Right. So I have all kinds of different backgrounds. But I think we're starting to come to the point where now we understand enough shared terminology mm-hmm. that we can have some really interesting discussions. Mm-hmm. And especially as we get to the end of the semester and we start to see the ways in which all of these little individual arcs contribute to an overarching picture, mm-hmm. I think we're going to have some great discussions. I remember the last time I taught it, it was fabulous. So I'm really looking forward to that.
The last time you taught it, did you find a big divide? Once, because you've got to get them all acclimated, you've got to teach them all the nomenclature, you've got to orient them to the whole conversation. I mean, that takes a long time. But once you got them there, did you find a big divide between the musicians and non-musicians and their experiences and perspectives about this?
You know, I didn't. Because music works for everyone, mm-hmm. right? And that's why I want to study it.
Right.
Regardless of how much training you might have had formally in music, you have opinions about music.
Right, right.
You understand that music gives you chills or makes your hair stand on mm-hmm, end. Mm-hmm. All of those responses apply to everybody, regardless of how much training they've had.
Right.
And so I think everybody is starting to realize, oh, this is a really common experience that
right.
we share.
Right.
So that has been great.
One of the fascinating opportunities that we have here at DePauw, being a school of music and a college of liberal arts combined, gives us the opportunity to bring disparate people together to talk about a very common thing. And here, that common thing is music, the thing that unites us in so many ways. And this is a fascinating course, and thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
From their concert of last Sunday, September 22nd, 2013, here's an excerpt of composer Frank Ticelli's piece, Blue Shades, performed by the DePauw University Band, directed by Professor Craig Paré, and featuring clarinetist Dan Hickey. Hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. We're also on Facebook at DePauw Music for Life, and you can subscribe to our show on iTunes by searching there for DePauw Music for Life. Our student producers are Anna Gatdula, Matt Skiba, Rachel Clark, Katie Sherman, and Burke Stanton. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening to our show. Keep music in your life, and have a great week. It's music for life.